What's up, guys? Welcome into another bonus episode, Two Peas on a Podcast. This time around, it's going to be fun. We're doing our top five rock albums from the 1990s. I'm joined by two dear friends of mine, a married couple, Chris Wiz, whose voice you guys will recognize, and his wife, Allison. Join me as the three of us compare our top five rock and roll albums from the 1990s. Check it out and hit us up online with all your feedback. I hope you enjoy this number three bonus mini episode. Welcome on in, guys. It's another bonus episode. You can't get enough of us, so I just keep recording shit and putting it out for you. That's how I do it. And actually, there's only one person that can't get enough of us, and that's Chris Wiz. And guess what? He's recording with me today.
What's up, Gerald?
We could have just done this as a phone call, I guess, but I figured I would record it and put it on the internet. But
you don't talk on the phone, sir.
That's true. I don't. That's true. So listen, we're doing our bonus episodes, our third bonus episode, and I'm going to start doing these fun things, which actually, Wiz, you were a part of kind of deciding to do that. We decided we'll do the kind of like top five fun list, you know, and give people kind of a fun thing instead of all this Trump crap that we talk about all the time.
I know. I've been looking at, compared to what's going on in the government, I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, exactly. So this will be a little field trip for us, but Gerald is here, Two Peas on a Podcast, and let's welcome in Chris Wiz, who's a frequent contributor and guest host for us. Chris, I hope you're doing well, buddy. And
I am. Thank you for having me again.
Love to have you again. And then not only that, but you brought along your wife, which I think is awesome. And, you know, we kind of just found out about that yesterday. But Allison is here. Allison, how are you?
Hi, doing super good.
Yeah, you are the best. I really appreciate you being here. And, you know, what we're doing this week, guys, is for this bonus episode is we are counting down our top five rock albums of the 1990s. Wiz and I met in the, actually all three of us, Allison as well, we met in the 90s. We've been good friends for, I can't do math, but however long that is, I feel like that's 22 years. Thank you. I didn't bring a calculator to this podcast. So anyway, two very, very dear friends of mine that I take credit for bringing them together. They are married 15 years today. Is that right, guys?
Today.
That's right.
What the fuck? And you're spending it with me. That's sad. Well, and but it also makes me feel good.
Yeah, ultimately, Gerald, we began through you, if you don't recall.
Oh no, I recall. No, I definitely fucking recall.
let's retract that a little bit.
Actually, what? In about a week and a half,
yes.
You and I were together when I met Chris for the first time.
Yes.
That's 22 right. years ago, yes. August 11th.
Yeah, that's great. So we knew each other before Wiz and I knew each other. And and now we're all together. It's a fucking nice, happy family. And speaking of family, you guys have way too many fucking kids.
That's
I feel like, what do you
can't keep him off of me.
That's what it is. So listen, you guys ready? Do you have your list together?
We got it.
All right. So we're 90s junkies. We grew up in the 90s. We met each other in the 90s. The 80s I love too. Don't get me wrong. Very prominent years for me in the 1980s, especially as far as music's concerned. But 90s was really kind of the heart of when I really got into stuff in the grunge era, and I graduated high school in 94. I know you guys were right around that same time frame. So what we're going to do is we're basically just going to kind of bounce off each other. I didn't pick an order, so I'll let ladies go first. I'll let Allison go first. But we're going to count. We're going to count.
One thing I struggled with was order.
Oh, really? Well, we're going to count down from 5 to 1, if you can do that, if you wouldn't mind, because I'm going to put this online and let people vote for who the best overall list is. Okay?
Gotcha.
Now, I will say that I texted Chris yesterday because I put my list together yesterday, and I told him that has to be what Giving Birth feels like, narrowing it down to five albums. And I just want you to confirm that, Allison. Is that accurate?
You know, I didn't really get a choice in my birth order.
Awesome.
Yes, this was difficult, but I would say that for me, Giving Birth is probably easier.
Okay, fair enough. That's kind of what I was going with there. It was very hard. It was very hard not only to narrow it down to five, because I've got about a fucking, I kept it to like 10, but I've got like 10 honorable mentions that I just couldn't put in that final five. And and then the order was just as hard. I'm sure you guys experienced that as well. But we're going to do the top five rock albums of the 1990s. Okay. And I think we'll come back, Wiz, and maybe we'll do hip hop at a future episode. And, you know, different genres. We'll do top five soundtracks. We'll do all kinds of crap, okay? But top five rock albums of the 1990s. Allison, if you wouldn't mind, start us off with your number five album.
Sure. My number five is going to be Korn.
Wow. The self-titled debut.
Self-titled Korn. Also, interesting story. That brings us back about 15 years, you and I.
It does, yes.
Interesting story there. So that was definitely probably one of mine in the 90s was Korn.
Yeah, you and I saw them together. Was it Ziggy's in Winston, right? It was like...
It was.
Which people that aren't from North Carolina, just to give you a visual, you could fit maybe 300 people in there before it's like... a drastic fire hazard.
Right. Is a 300. Very, very generous estimate on that one.
But after you drank enough, it looked like 600. So
yeah, that's true.
It always looked a little bit bigger to me than it actually was.
You started seeing double. And I remember that show because that was one of their first shows, at least on the East Coast, I would imagine. But and they had their backdrop, you know, their stage kind of decoration at the time was a bed sheet that somebody spray painted Korn on.
I do believe that. I think it was black and white. I was slightly high during that show. So,
yeah. Korn has a special place to me. I saw them. I actually lost count, but I want to say like 13 or 14 times throughout the duration of the 90s and into the mid 2000s. And my sister
likes a bagpipe.
Yeah, dude. So whatever, you know, whenever they would come in town, my sister was a big fan. We'd go see him. Chris, how do you feel about the Korn pick there? Don't give away any of your picks, but how do you feel about Allison's number five there? I love it.
I kind of that first album was great for me, but I kind of lost. They lost the momentum with me a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
That Uncle Touch Me music was kind of big around there. So I was. It was good. That first album, I think, for me was the best. I mean, starting out with Blind and kind of going into it.
So
I mean,
good,
That's probably one of the greatest number one track songs there, especially on rock albums.
And it was an intro to that band too. If you think about that, I mean, one of the best intros to a band. You know, this is how we're starting our career is that first, you know, 30, 45 seconds of that song.
Yeah, but, that was awesome.
And you know, they would open all their shows with that song. I don't know if they still do, but I had an opportunity to see them, Allison, last year. My sister and I went to see them. They did a show in Charlotte. They did a tour. I want to say it was only like 20 cities. It was very short. It was like a month long, but it was for the anniversary of that album. And what they did is they just did a show from cover to cover. They played every song of that album. That was it.
Nice.
Yeah. So my sister and I and her husband went to see that and it was great. So a great number five to start us off, Allison. You get no qualms from me. I love Korn. They have a special place in my heart. Kind of like what Wiz said, the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, they've kind of dipped off a little bit. But
yeah, we talked about that yesterday, too. But we're definitely, you know, we said the whole album, I'm going to go with that one from the 90s.
I love it. Yeah. You got my support. Wiz, you want to hit us with your number five, brother?
Yes, number five on my chart. We're going to go with 1992's Alice in Chains, Dirt.
Another good one. Is there going to be a bad one? I don't think anybody's going to have a bad one, though, let's be honest. But go ahead and explain why you picked Dirt.
Oh, that's a follow-up to their first album, Facelift, which I loved. And then with Man in the Box on that first album, that was the late 90s. They started touring on the Monsters of Rock tour with some like the big headliners like Metallica and Megadeth and those guys. And then kind of came into their own with the grunge scene in 92. Having Wood on the single soundtrack kind of lifted them a little bit. So this album for me, I was really excited about. I remember in the early 90s. And then really cover to cover, some great stories. Jerry Cantrell on guitar and Lane Staley, who, you know, our third son his middle name is Lane in honor of him. Just a great cover to cover album.
I didn't know that. No, it really is. Allison, you share the sentiment there?
You know, I don't really have a choice. Chris only plays so much music. And that has been drummed into my head for the last 20 some years.
Yeah, Alice in Chains is
so great. I almost had, again, I had to listen to it, and he also named one of our kids after Lane Staley. So
it's
almost like a hostage situation.
It really
when
is.
It comes to
I have no choice.
You
I
can't,
have no choice.
Yeah, you can't go wrong, Alice in Chains. I mean, really, their whole catalog, but they did a great MTV Unplugged. I don't remember what year that was. That was also, I want to say, mid to late 90s, but Dirt is probably their best album cover to cover. I mean, Rooster, just such a haunting tune. And Wood, which blew up, was probably the most popular song. I don't have the track listing in front of me, but Wood is probably the most popular. But yeah, great album there, Wiz. It's not on my list. It's one of my honorable mentions, however. But it is a great band, great album, great choice. All right, so my number. First of all, I didn't say this in the beginning, but just so all the listeners know, and I'm sure you told Allison this too, Wiz, but just so everyone knows, this is like our top five as opposed to like, you know, as opposed to if we were writing for Rolling Stone or something and we were trying to name the top five, you know, based on record sales and popularity and that kind of thing. So this, what I had to do, because there's so many fucking albums that I love from that era, is I had to pick the five that I remember just listening to just fucking over and over and over again. And honestly, I still do. I still go back to these.
Right.
So I picked.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what we did.
Yeah. That's how we did it. I mean, because some of these albums may not be like on the writers or the critics top five.
Right.
But emotionally, I think we all put our hearts into where we wanted these albums.
And the ones that still hold up today, I can easily put on one of my top five and listen to it cover to cover.
Yes.
And still absolutely enjoy it.
So my number five is one of the ones, however, that it's very critically acclaimed amongst like the 90s albums. And you would find it on a lot of top 10s, but definitely like a lot of top 20 lists from that the 90s era, especially in rock and roll, but just albums in general. So I kind of cheated a little bit with this one, but also I remember when it came out, I go back to my sister again. This was her favorite band at the time in the mid 90s. So she kind of was like, dude, you got to hear this band. And I was like, whatever. And I heard a little bit of, actually, Wiz, you'll know when I tell the story, but at Peaches, the record shop we worked at, I'd heard a little bit of their first album, which wasn't a huge success. And then this one came out. And it was just like they took over the fucking world. But my number five is Dookie by Green Day.
Oh, nice. Good one. Good one.
Honorable mention on mine.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it brought back punk rock to the mainstream. It really did. And, you know, they had a poppy way of being punk rock where you could play it on the radio and you could still be rebellious by listening to it. So it was kind of a weird, happy medium they were able to find there. But I don't know if you remember, Wiz, but they had Kerplunk, which was their first kind of indie release in rotation at Peaches. And, you know, I'd heard about that album. And then my sister was like, you got to listen to Dookie. And as soon as I did, I was like, well, this is great. And then MTV started playing the videos and so on and so forth. So Green Day is my number five with Dookie. And that wraps us back around to Allison for your number four.
Oh, let's see. My number four, I'm going to go with something that probably isn't on most people's radar, but immediately I thought of Silverchair, Frog Stomp.
That's good. I like Silverchair. I got to be honest. I'll let Wiz give his opinion, but I got to be honest. I don't know the whole album, really. I feel like I only knew two or three tracks. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Wiz?
It's fine. I do remember the album. We were doing the list. It was funny. You had one of the greatest quotes about Silverchair, because if you remember, they were like 15 from Australia mm-hmm. when that song came out, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, this band has no career ahead of them, which I thought we thought was funny because they were only 15 and we're like, oh, they're gonna make like 50 other albums,
right?
But it seems like Frog Stomp was probably their pinnacle of their music career. They had a couple albums after that kind of faded out, but. No, that album, you know, it was a little bit, you know, from the other side of the world, the Australian take of grunge. Mm-hmm. I remember it very fondly, you know, from mm-hmm. Tomorrow, mm-hmm. You know, on through.
I agree. Video was great. I think at the time, you know, my early 20s there, I don't think I was really old enough to appreciate that music was coming out of 15-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you know what I mean? I look back on it now and I'm like, holy shit, these guys are 15. This sounds amazing. It sounds like they've been doing this their whole life. And at the time, I guess I just didn't have the appreciation for it. You know, even though I did love the two or three songs that, you know, were released on popular radio. I'm surprised you put it in your top five, Allison, I got to be honest. But hey.
I know. But again, it's kind of one of those things where if you just immediately, you know, think about a culmination of the music from this time period, mm-hmm. it's sort of one of those things that just reminds me of a happy time.
That's great.
You know, right around 90, probably 1995. You know, riding in Chris's big red truck. And this is one of the CDs that we had, and we kind of had it on.
That's what I call my penis, the big red truck.
There it is. Yeah. There it is.
It's taken me many places, that big red truck.
Listening to Silverchair. I appreciate
it. It happens to be one of those things.
Yeah, I appreciate the choice, no doubt. I just, it wasn't on my radar just because, like I said, I didn't know the whole album, if I'm being honest. Right. So, Wiz, you're up, man. Number four, what do you got?
Number four, I've got 1993's Billy Corgan and the group, Smashing Pumpkins' Siamese Dreams.
Great album. Also one of my honorables. So I'm not going
to. Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. So we're close. I'm just not making your top five. Yeah.
Why is that one of your top five? I mean, it's a great album. But what's your reasoning?
Oh, I mean, again, I think it's, you know, just like Allison had with Korn with Blind, you know, starting out with Cherub Rock and that the drum that's just beating, and then it goes into guitar and, you know, just some of the heavier stuff. I know, you know, Today is kind of their biggest hit off of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the heavy stuff towards like the, and I say, because I remember getting this on tape. So like tracks 5, 6, 7, and 8 on the B side of it with Mayonnaise and Silver Fuck and a couple of the other songs on there were just these epic, just sound. It was all this auditory sound that was great. And I love Billy's voice and what they were doing. And I remember before this came out, Gish was their first album. Before this came out, there was a big like bidding war for them. And if you remember, a couple of those bands like had these big bidding wars. And the Chicago scene was kind of the all, you know, the second city to Seattle. So great cover to cover album. I mean, they obviously followed it up with some good albums after that.
Yeah, I love Smashing Pumpkins catalog as well. Siamese Dream to me is their best one. So if I was going to pick one, it would be that one also. A lot of people, a lot of people say Melancholy just for kind of the epicness of it, you know, being the double album and so many different kind of genres on one album. But, you know, I love Siamese Dream. You know, I have a memory of that album, Chris, which actually I don't know. I can't remember if you and I were buds yet, but I had somebody break into my car and steal my CD player out of my car when I lived on UNCG campus. And
is that the Accord?
Yes. And ironically, it was literally like the day after I had gotten Siamese Dream. And I remember that's what I was upset about, because like I was just getting to know the album. I'd only listened to it like once or twice, and I was like, ah, shit, you know, it was in the CD player. So they got Siamese Dreams. So I had to go buy another copy of it. But yeah, it's a great album, man. Very good choice. I got no qualms there. Allison, you like that pick?
Yeah, I do. It's
yeah, it's a good album.
Yeah, probably one of those. It's just one of those albums, you know, that you do remember from the 90s. Not my favorite, but one that I can definitely listen to.
Yeah, no, I feel that. Great album. Good job there, Wiz. All right, so my number four is probably going to be a little unpopular, I would imagine. And when I say unpopular, I mean just not a lot of people. I don't know, kind of similar maybe to Allison's Silverchair pick, where a lot of people you kind of would blindside them with the choice. But they are, I would say, in the mid, like 96, 97, 98 range is when they kind of became my favorite band. Active band, and they've remained that for 20 years.
Nice.
Wiz may know, but they're my favorite band. Anytime they're around live, I will be there. In fact, I just saw them last month. It was an outdoor concert in the rain, which was amazing. But this album is what kind of turned them into my favorite band. It was their sophomore effort, and it's the Deftones, an album called an album called Around the Fur.
Nice.
From 1997. It's also the newest, or the youngest, I should say, album on my list. But 1997, Around the Fur, I mean, you know, starting with My Own Summer, just in your face, just gritty, like, fuck you, here we come. And coming off of Adrenaline, which was much more melodic and kind of, you know, had a lot of melodies to it, where this one was just very, very hard. You got songs like Head Up, and the only kind of melodic one on this one is Be Quiet and Drive. All the other, I want to say, 9 tracks are just balls to the wall, and this one, Deftones really kind of jumped in the front of the bus for that new metal kind of movement. And, you know, we talked about Korn earlier, you know, kind of in that group with Korn and those guys. So Around the Fur was what did it for me, and like I said, they've been my favorite band ever since, so I had to put them in my top five, and to me, that's their best album. So
that's good stuff. And just a story here, I actually took my daughter. They opened for Incubus 2 years ago.
Nice.
So my daughter and I got to go see them live. That was actually the first time I got to see the Deftones live.
Yes, ironically, I know. Never seen Deftones.
I know, and that. Deftones opened for Korn when you guys went to go see
them.
That's
true, yep. And Orange 9mm, who I also love. And yeah, I mean, Deftones are great, man. I mean, they have that staying power that I want. I mean, of course, Korn is successful. Don't get me wrong. They're selling albums. They have fans. But just that staying power of just being true to themselves and being indie. I mean, when they play, they still play clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been around 30 years. And they're still playing clubs and still making a living out of being musicians and not really changing their style. So I love I love the Deftones. They've always been near and dear to me. So
I'm surprised you went with that. I thought maybe Adrenaline or even White Pony would have been your choice with the Deftones.
They're great. But, you know, Around the Fur, like Allison said, it's just a sentimental attachment. Like, that's the album that catapulted them to the top of the list for me. Do you know what I mean? So I hold that one in the most regard. Now, would I say, is it the best album of theirs? You know, like production wise and lyrically and stuff like that? No. It probably White Pony would be my guess. But for me, my personal favorite of theirs is Around the Fur because of the memories that I have of the attachment to it.
Nice. Yeah, good choice. Makes total sense.
So let's wrap around to our top three. We're getting to the nitty gritty here. So Allison, you want to kick us off with your number three?
Here we go. Number three, I have on here Counting Crows, August and Everything After.
God. God, so fucking good, right? That's one of my honorable mentions. And you know what? It was my number five. So this would, this would technically be my number six. But go ahead, talk a little bit about that album.
Yeah, I really don't have a whole lot to say about this one, except that it just kind of, again, brings me back to a place where I don't have a lot of memories of my childhood or of my, you know, late teens, probably for several reasons. But this one just reminds me of being carefree, happy.
Yeah.
You know, just, again, being able to put it in the CD player. I think it was on a CD for me. And playing it over and over again. And it just, it reminds me of just kind of being carefree and happy.
I love it. I mean, I know Wiz and I listen to this album together, so I know he agrees. Oh, yeah. But very Van Morrison-ish, which he's one of my favorite artists of all time, Van Morrison is.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, it's a great album. I mean, it's the Counting Crows' best album, in my opinion. And it is one of those albums, Allison, you're right, where I could literally listen to cover. I don't have to skip one song. I love them all.
I mean, and like Allison said, I mean, it's like, it's almost like that summer album.
Yeah.
Where you can just put it on, you know, just whatever, top down, what have you.
Yeah.
Go from cover to cover. Hey, his lyrics were kind of different. He had that Van Morrison, you know, the la 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 kind of sound to it, especially Mr. Jones. But, you know, overall, I mean, some interesting lyrics. He got to bang with Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox after that. So, I mean, with that, the album is a success. You know, in my mind, right away.
No, absolutely.
Phoebe, and he would have got the whole Friends cast.
Absolutely, yeah. He should have tried to fuck Ross, man. I don't know what he's fucking messing up there. But I agree with that pick. I love that pick. Like I said, that would technically be my number six if we were doing a top ten. Great album. Anna Begins, Rain King, Omaha. I mean, obviously, Mr. Jones was the biggest single off of that album. But just a great, great album. Good, very good choice. Very good pick. I love it. I got no problem with it. Wiz, what do you got number three there, brother?
Number three is this one squeaked into the 90s, and I could have picked two other albums by this group, but huge influential band from the 90s out of Athens, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The other two honorable mentions would have been Automatic for the People and Monster, but I had to go with Out of Time by R.E.M.,
okay.
1990s release. Obviously, Losing My Religion was kind of the flagship of that album. But one of my all-time favorite songs called Country Feedback is the second-to-last song on that album.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go back to that album and, you know, depending on what mood or what's going on, it either makes me super happy or super depressed.
Yeah.
So, but cover to cover, you know, it broke away from they're like an indie scene. You know, Green got him on the map, but this really put him over the edge. And Michael Stipe, I mean, his voice is amazing. He's still, you know, doing it, you know, without, you know, Peter Buck and all the other guys. But it's just for me, again, one of those cover to cover albums that I could just put on and just let it go.
I agree with you, brother. Spoiler alert, I have an REM on my list as well. I won't tell you if it's the same or if it's a different album, but one of the greatest bands of all time, in my opinion, especially if you're talking like alternative rock type stuff. But I love that album as well. I mean, Losing My Religion, in my opinion, is probably one of the best rock songs, period. The video is amazing. I think I want to say it may be one video of the year that year as well. But
I think it was Samuel Bear that directed or something like that.
Yes,
or?
And it was all... Yeah, it was very weird and eclectic, and then you started kind of seeing that trend in music videos after that. But
right,
yeah, it was like a living art piece kind of. But just a great album. REM's great. I mean, you could have said anything REM, and I'm just gonna be like, "Yep, okay,
<You're right." laughs> we're good."
Are you a fan of REM, Allison? You like them?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it's one of those. Great. Actually, I think probably the videos back when MTV played these things is probably one of the things, because what was that, 1990?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get into videos and things like that basically until early 90s.
Right. That's true.
You know,
that's
started working at Best Buy, and I started kind of really getting into music because I had no choice because I was around y'all.
there you go.
And then just kind of watching the videos. That's what I remember the most of REM. But yeah, the whole thing, even now we're watching that channel?
Yeah, like the Vimeo channels and stuff like that.
Stuff.
Right.
Kind of coming full circle because our 9-year-old Maddox is kind of getting into, you know, some of the music that we used to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those nostalgic things. We're like, ooh, you want to hear music from when we were kids, you know?
Yes.
REM kind of comes in there. That's one of those things that we jump back to and we want to share with the kids.
Yeah, same thing will happen to me. My daughter's going to be 16 in a couple months, and she, you know, she'll be playing. She'll want to play music in the car, you know, and I'll let her control the music in the car or whatever. And she'll put on, you know, something that I was into 20, 30 years ago. And it just,
makes you a proud papa, yeah, doesn't it?
It's just so cool, you know. And she made like an 80s playlist on Spotify, and, you know, she's got all these like grunge rock music and stuff. And I'm just like, you know, and I didn't really like, it's not like I forced her to do it, or I, you know, sure, she just grew up hearing it and was akin to it. So, all right. So my number three is probably going to, well, I don't know. You guys are surprising me a little bit. I was going to say this might be the first one that we all have on our list, but I don't know, maybe not. But my number three is kind of like Wiz said, I could have picked another one of theirs as well. Actually, a couple other ones of theirs as well. But I chose this one because not only of the critical success, but it was also kind of my introduction to them. I had heard, you know, a couple songs here and there, but this album, cover to cover, is really what kind of got me. And it's Super Unknown by Soundgarden.
Nice.
That is my number three, the late, great Chris Cornell and Soundgarden. You know, I mean, obviously Black Hole Sun. I mean, that's going to be one of your best rock songs ever. It'll go down in history. Very haunting and melodic tune there. Spoon Man is amazing. Just a great album. You know, I love Super Unknown. I feel like this was the culmination for Soundgarden in terms of songwriting. I should say Cornell, I guess. But in terms of songwriting, and then, you know, the rock music was radio friendly for the first time, really. So they were able to kind of get commercial success as well. But that's my number three, Soundgarden, Super Unknown. You guys like that? Or you?
I love
like it. We're listening to all this kind of mid-90s rock with one of our kids who's wanting to play the guitar. So when he gets a song stuck in his head, I think that might have been one of them, we play it over and over and over again. Yeah. So yeah, it's sort of near and dear and very recent for us.
It's a good time. You know, we may touch on a couple other ones here before the show's over, but you know, Black Hole Sun specifically is one of those rare songs that the one song is like a portal for people to come into the genre. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's one of those songs where you heard it on the radio or you saw it on MTV and you're like, wait a second, this sounds fucking cool. What is this? And then you get into that kind of scene and you start to hear all these other bands and all these other songs that are very similar. And Black Hole Sun was very, you know, it was very instrumental in kind of bringing a lot of people to that movement, in my opinion. So that one song alone is enough reason. But just the album, I love the album. It's one of my favorites in the 90s. So that's my number three.
Good choice.
Yeah. And Allison, that brings us back to you for your runner-up for your number two album of the 90s. What do you got?
Well, my number two is, I don't think we've ever seen these people. I don't even recall when I first heard this group. You know, it's one of those that around this time, we had some local talent. This band is somewhat local, coming out of Virginia. Mm-hmm. As soon as I heard it, though, it just was one of those things. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then again, one of these albums where you go to the second song and you're like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Right.
And then you keep going and the whole album just makes sense. And it's just, there's, you know, the culmination of the bands being local, for some reason having some kind of tie. I don't remember what it was, or even when I heard this. Mm-hmm. Chris may remember. I have an awful memory. But my number two actually is Seven Mary Three, American Standard.
Interesting.
95.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you see them with me, Allison? I saw them. Also at Ziggy's, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think we all went. Yeah. Oh, we might have.
Yeah, I think we saw them with Our Lady Peace, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Okay.
But yes,
so good. I did see them. My bad. I was young and I had a lot of fun back then.
Hey, no, no problem.
As you mentioned, she was high.
I was very high almost all the time.
Yeah, no problem. Now that you mentioned it, I feel like you were passed out in Wiz's truck the whole time. So maybe that's why you don't recall.
That might be true.
That might be the case.
No, it's a good album. I haven't listened to that since back then. Honestly, I haven't listened to that since maybe the late 90s, early 2000s. But again, you're surprising me because I respect what you're doing. You're obviously putting your favorites in here because I don't think, kind of like with Silverchair, I don't think any, you know, quote unquote critic would be putting Seven Mary Three in there.
Yeah.
Oh, you're probably absolutely right.
But I love it.
When it comes to best albums, I think for me, but I like to be unique as well. And I kind of pull things that, you know, most people don't. Chris and I kind of talked about our musical influences and he's got some that, you know, I kind of introduced him to like he did for me. You know, and obviously I think some of our honorable mentions are more kind of revolve around that not 100% mainstream, but still really, really good. Ones that we wish would have caught on, but didn't.
I love the path you're taking. I love it. And they're very nostalgic. So, you know, you're not going to get an argument from me. If the Google search kind of like trending searches had been around when Seven Mary Three was around, I feel like Cumbersome would have really been a popular Google search. Cause I can remember looking that up going, what the fuck does this mean? Of course I'm stupid. I'm stupid as well. That should be added. But nevertheless, great. Obviously the biggest single off that album, but a good album there. So good pick for Allison at number two, Seven Mary Three. American Standard, right? Is that the name of the album?
Yes,
American Standard. Okay. Wiz, what's your runner-up, buddy? What's your number two?
My number two is, and again, it was fortuitous of your opening that this band, not that album, is my number two album. Mm-hmm. They are still making music. Only takes about 12 to 15 years between albums.
Yeah, that's it.
However, the lead singer does probably 10 other things, makes wine, has another band called Pussifer, another band called A Perfect Circle. And he is probably, besides Freddie Mercury, my favorite frontman.
Yeah.
But my number two is the 1996 Tool album, Onima.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely can still go back to every day, listen to every song on there. They're all epic. It's prog rock. Love I it. Like no other prog rock bands ever, except for Tool. I can listen to their 15-minute version of whatever. Mm-hmm. I got to see them last year when they did like kind of a one-off tour. Mm-hmm. And this is between one and two, it was a really hard Sophie's choice, but I went with Onima by Tool is my number two.
I love it. Great album. Probably their best, like you said. Undertow is great as well. But yeah, I would say Onima is probably the best one. I saw them at Lollapalooza. They headlined of the year this album came out. So mm-hmm.
I saw them as well.
Yeah, I got to hear a lot of those songs performed live. But like you said, Keenan's just, I mean, as far as iconic rock and roll kind of geniuses go, he's up there. So
yeah. I got to name a cat Maynard, I've got a son with a middle name of Lane, and we had a cat named Maynard.
You're killing it, bro. You're killing it. Okay, well, I like that choice. I love Tool. Great band, and they've always been able to kind of keep themselves out of the spotlight, but still be very successful. Very similar, actually, kind of to Deftones a little bit. So,
yeah.
Great pick, buddy. Great pick. My runner-up is REM, so we're going to get back to REM.
There we go.
The album that I chose is, you know what? I didn't look it up, but I feel like they've put out at least 20 albums, and they've done a lot of music in their career. In my opinion, it doesn't get any better cover to cover than 1992's Automatic for the People.
There you go.
Also one of the most well-received critically, but just an amazing album. And my favorite songs off the album, Man on the Moon was huge, about Andy Kaufman and some other pop culture things that he references there, but... And then you have the very, very kind of sad but somehow eerily uplifting song, Everybody Hurts, which is a very popular song in pop culture, still gets used a lot today. But my favorite ones off the album were probably Night Swimming and the Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight. Two of my favorite songs, period, but definitely two of my favorite REM songs. But Automatic for the People, just, Monster is also an honorable mention of mine. You mentioned that one, Wiz.
Right.
Just love REM. I just feel like they're kind of their own genre, if that makes sense.
They brought that kind of that indie, southern alternative to the forefront, where you got bands like REM and they had noise to their sound, like a Sonic Youth kind of sound, but with a little more poppiness. They were more digestible than something like Sonic Youth.
Exactly. I agree. So that's mine. Automatic for the People from REM is my number two. And we are up to our number ones, guys. So everybody's going to give their number one album. And then I'm going to throw it up on Twitter and probably Facebook to get everybody to vote on what the best top five is, just for fun. We can talk shit to each other.
There we go.
I'm feeling pretty good about my list so far. But, you guys got some good ones on here as well. So, Allison, you are up first for your number one album of the 1990s. What do you got?
Number one, I'm going to stick with my trend of being completely unique. this is someone who probably a lot of people aren't even aware of. This goes back to, I don't even know what year, 1992. Mm-hmm. This is one woman who, for some reason, during that time period for me, obviously, that I like to be a bit unconventional. Her lyrics were exactly that. Mm-hmm. And it resonated with me. And my number one pick is going to be Liz Phair. Exile in Guyville.
I love that. Wiz, you remember listening to that album at Peaches? That's good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Man.
That's good stuff. Liz Phair's great. I mean, again, it was off my radar because I haven't listened to it in so long. But what's good about this, Allison, is you're making me want to go back and listen to a lot of this shit. So
you should. I did last night, listened to the whole entire album, yeah. And I was like, yes. But why has it been so long since I've sat down and done this?
We're out, singing out loud, fucking run.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's kid friendly, but it was, oh my goodness.
Yeah, definitely not kid friendly, but any song that I can say the word fuck in,
yeah.
I'm down.
Liz Phair's great. And in the 90s, there was a lack of kind of that female rocker, too. You know, you had. Yeah. You had L7 and what's the band that I like a lot that I'm forgetting? Luscious Jackson was around there.
Luscious Jackson. Yeah. We brought up Lords of Acid too. That was one of them that I got Chris onto. But yeah, I was kind of trying to stick with some that, you know, made a difference.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I was also going more towards some women rockers because I knew you guys would be kind of all about the dudes.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't even think about it from that angle, but you're right. Mine is all dudes, and I guess maybe Wiz's is too. But yeah, Liz Phair was great. Very just kind of the rebellious female, and like I said, you didn't get a lot of that. The other band that I liked that I was trying to think of was a 7 Year Bitch. I like them a lot. Yeah. All female. I think they were a 3-piece, but all female rock group. L7 was all female. But yeah, good pick there, Liz Phair. You're number one. Awesome.
My number one.
That is
She was like Joan Baez with a middle finger. It was awesome.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. No, good choice. Very good choice. Hey, and the woman is in picking that empowering number one. So I got no problem with that, Allison. Good job.
Right. There we go.
Very unified pick there.
Yeah, you know me. All inclusive, equality, keeping it real.
There it is. Wiz, yeah. You ready to tell the world your number one album of the 90s, brother? I think I could fucking guess it.
You probably
could. I mean, I think I know yours, so yeah. You probably know mine.
I'm really surprised one of our children is not named this.
We have no children named Vetter. But
yet.
It would be.
Yet.
It would
you guys be, have kids every year, so there's still hope.
Yeah, there's chance that we can have some Jeff Ament kids.
But go ahead.
But 1991's Pearl Jam 10, yeah. To me is the quintessential 90s album.
Yeah.
There are some great albums out there, and I think I know what your number one is. And I left it. I really purposely left it off my list just because I thought we could have some different number ones.
That's fine.
It is an honorable mention. I think you're going to say, but Pearl Jam, I mean, that just, it was kind of that grunge sound, but it just had something different and it was mm-hmm. elevated to a new level. Obviously they were seasoned rockers coming out of, Andy Wood just dying and bringing in mm-hmm. Eddie Vedder. So they had some, some play so that, it was their debut album as Pearl Jam, but they had some records behind them. So just bringing in this kid from San Diego that just had great lyrics. His voice was gruff and it was just it blew me away. And ever since I've been a huge Pearl Jam fan. I can't say that I've listened to every song on every album after the third or fourth album, but just still always can go back to them. It's a warm, comfortable blanket of music.
Right. Hey, you're not going to get an argument from me. It's one of my honorable mentions, and it was in my top five, actually, when I first started making my list. And then I started remembering all these other fucking albums.
Right.
I started having to kind of like edit my list a little bit, but it would probably be like my number 7 or 8. I mean, it's the best Pearl Jam one. I did love Versus as well. Versus is one of my personal favorites as far as, just the songs that really kind of, I remember like Rearview Mirror is one of my favorite songs of all time and Elderly Woman and, those tunes. But, 10 introduced the world to Pearl Jam, and they did kind of have that Mother Love Bone sound a little bit, which was obviously the fans missed because of Andy's death. So, hey, you're not going to get an argument from me. I mean, it's a great album. I'm biased a little bit in what I'm going to pick for my number one when it comes to, a lot of times, in other words, what I'm saying, a lot of times in the 90s, people will kind of pit Pearl Jam against the band that I'm about to talk about. And first of all, I don't think that's fair. I don't think we should do that, but...
And there was no there was no rivalry.
Right.
They both actually liked each other, so.
Right, and it's two different kinds of music, really. I mean, they got put in the same bucket, but if you listen to their albums, they're not very, very similar. I mean, they're more different than similar. My number one album is going to be no surprise to anyone that knows me, not going to be a surprise to Wiz, probably not even to Allison, but my favorite band of all time, period, of any band that's ever existed is Nirvana. I actually have three of their albums on here. I couldn't have
that's Incesticide, right?
I could have had that one too, I guess, but I couldn't have had their fourth technically album because it came out in 89, or I probably would have had that as well. But Nevermind from 1991 is not only my number one album of the 90s, but I feel like if you guys Google any list of rock albums of all time, it's going to be on there. It's going to be in the top 5 or top 10 of pretty much every list that exists. And that's just albums, period, of all time. And I'm talking about the 90s. You know, and the reason being, of course, I have a personal connection to it because I loved it. And it was when I first got introduced to what was ended up, you know, grunge. It was that album and Smells Like Teen Spirit, much like millions of other people. That song just was an introduction to a new era. I mean, you know, Guns N' Roses was on the outs. All these hair bands were on the outs. And Nirvana came in and said, you know what, we'll fucking give you what we got. And then it was the next big thing, so to speak. Now, you know, Kurt Cobain and Nirvana will be the first ones to tell you, we weren't the best band in that era. We weren't, you know, we weren't the ones that should have ushered in that era. But nevertheless, they did. You know, I was a kid in southern North Carolina, so I'm not going to hear, you know, Screaming Trees and Sonic Youth in the early 90s. You know, I'm not going to hear that shit. So Nirvana was able to transcend really just what Smells Like Teen Spirit. But then, of course, it took off from there and they never looked back as far as, you know, hits were concerned. But Nevermind for me is the album of the 90s. You know, and I know you don't want to hear this, Wiz, but I feel like success of bands like Pearl Jam and other and Alice in Chains and others that we've mentioned here today actually may have been better as far as skills are concerned. I'm not going to argue that point. But I feel like they all owe a little bit to, you know, Teen Spirit and Nevermind as far as a mainstream outlet.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that first riff on Smells Like Teen Spirit just kind of, I think it just, it killed Hairband.
Yeah, it did. Just that first 15 seconds and you're like, okay, that era's over. We're on to the next thing here. And you know what? I saw an interview that Kurt and Chris Novoselic did once that's basically just a ripoff of More Than a Feeling by Boston. First, that intro to Teen Spirit is just that song, but played a little bit faster. So I thought that was pretty cool. So that's cool, it.
Yeah, that band taught me how to tie a flannel shirt around my waist.
There you go. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They just, you know,
very influential.
That's what I'm saying. And they didn't want that, so I feel bad, you know, just saying that. But I mean, that's true. I mean, they basically are the poster child for that grunge era, you know.
Exactly.
They are the band, and that album is the album that really defines that era, which is the majority of the 90s. So that's why it's my number one, and it doesn't hurt that they're my favorite band of all time. Let's talk a little bit about some of our honorable mentions that did not, if there's any that did not get mentioned throughout the course of the show, Allison, what are some of your honorables there?
Oh yeah, you'll probably hate this one too, but I put down Everclear, okay. Sparkle and Fade.
Okay. Hey, do you. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, they had some good singles. I gotta be honest. I was singing along to a couple of those tunes back in the day. But again, it's an album I haven't, or albums that I haven't listened to in a long, long time. But they had their place in the 90s. You got, you know, especially like Santa Monica and, yeah. You know, they were doing their thing out there, man. I got no problem with that. Any other honorable mentions that you didn't hear today?
I think my honorable mentions actually made it onto Chris's list.
Okay. All right.
Again, like I said, when he asked me to do this, I immediately said my top five. Mm-hmm. Some of my top five actually weren't what I initially said, mm-hmm. And he stole them mm-hmm. to put on his top five. So
there you go. So now you can't say him. What the fuck, Chris?
Exactly. But I also, you know, wanted to keep it pretty original and not duplicate things. So
no, you did. And you know what's funny, guys? I thought that you guys were going to, at a minimum, duplicate Soundgarden. I got to be honest. So ironically, I did not see this happening, but we didn't match any albums.
Nothing.
I know. I think that's awesome. Touched on lots of different points.
That is awesome.
In times.
And that speaks to that speaks to that era too. I mean, there's so many good fucking albums here.
It's so many.
All right. So go ahead.
We put on there like we're going to go with this one right here.
Oh yeah. I have a whole piece of paper with honorable mentions.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to, you know, give a shout out to both Nevermind and In Utero by mm-hmm. Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
One that I thought would make your list would be the Beastie Boys' Ill Communications.
You know what? I didn't know it would have, and I didn't want to cheat because I don't know if that's a rap album or a rock album. I guess it's both, but
I mean, they play their own instruments. I think it counts as rock.
I know. That's a good point. I guess if it was like pure rock and not a lot of hip hop influences, I would have, but I don't know. Yeah. I did think about that album. Believe me. And it was on my list of my original list, but I just felt like it was too much of a rap album.
Right.
And I don't want to get into any controversy with you guys. So
I didn't know the rules, Gerald. In fact, my first, you know,
was TLC.
TLC would have made it on there. I actually went Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
For the 90s.
Well, don't give away too much.
To reel that in.
Don't give away too much.
Hip hop one coming up
because we might. Okay. This was so much fun. I want to do a hip hop one with you guys in the coming week. So don't give away too much. But nineties was a great thing for hip hop.
Nobody mentioned either Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
Love Downward Spiral. Yeah. Radiohead had two between the Benz and Pablo Honey.
Yeah.
You didn't mention Hole. I'm guessing that's on your honorable mention.
It is. I'll give you a few honorable mentions here of mine. You guys all did great, by the way. I love all these. There's not one album I heard that I was like, what the fuck? There's some that I haven't heard in forever, but something should be said for the fact that I want to go back and listen to some of those now because they were awesome at the time. So some of my honorable mentions that we didn't talk a whole lot about. Well, you just mentioned Radiohead. The Benz would be for me. I saw that tour when they came around to the Cat's Cradle in Chapel Hill, and the Benz was just cover to cover, just a fucking masterpiece. I also didn't cheat with this one. It wouldn't have made my top five anyway, but it would have definitely been in my top 10. But Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusions as a set.
Right.
I feel like Volume 1 is probably better as just an off album, but Use Your Illusions was great. I was a big GNR fan in the 80s. And that was kind of like the last album they made before it was just like they disappeared.
Before Axl went fucking crazy.
Yeah. You know, you guys already said, you know, Pearl Jam 10, obviously not only In Utero, but Unplugged in New York is just an amazing album. Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory.
Okay.
We just lost Chester. I loved Hybrid Theory. That was a great album. Rage Against the Machine's debut, self-titled album. Love that one. And then the only other one that didn't really get mentioned today that I thought was a great album, I didn't write down the year, but I want to say it was like 92 or 93, was Metallica's Black Album. With Inner Sandman and Unforgiven. So those are some honorable mentions. But hey, you can't go wrong, 90s rock, man. I mean, it's just like, it's like that Sirius XM station, Lithium, you know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, every song is great. One that I thought that we'd all kind of, that I put on my honorable mention list was the Pulp Fiction soundtrack.
We're going to do a soundtracks one, so I stayed away from soundtracks.
Okay, never mind, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. One. Hey, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Somebody mentioned on Twitter, we had I'd put up a little fan question to see what some of the favorites of the fans were out there. And somebody actually mentioned, actually, let me read a couple of them because these guys are great because they listen. So Tommy Bort over on Twitter said the Crow soundtrack, The Color and the Shape by Foo Fighters, Lives Throwing Copper, and Garbage version 2.0.
Okay.
Some good albums there. Superhero Speak on Twitter said Metallica's Metallica, which I assume he means the Black Album.
Black Album, yeah.
Also Throwing Copper by Live, Pearl Jam's 10, Nirvana's Nevermind, and the Singles soundtrack. That's the one I was thinking of. The Countdown Pod said, good friends of ours from Australia, but they did not say Silverchair.
No, Silverchair.
Allison, I apologize.
Like Midnight Oil, AC/DC.
But they said Super Unknown, Nirvana's Nevermind, Angel Dust by Faith No More, which I thought was interesting. Okay. And There's Nothing Left to Lose, which is from the Foo Fighters album. And then Pearl Jam's 10. So there's some reactions over there on Twitter. And then on Facebook, our loyal follower, Will Brewster, had a couple that he mentioned. And he actually mirrored my Linkin Park affinity. But he said Meteora and Hybrid Theory from Linkin Park. And then he also is a fan of Disturbed, so he said The Sickness and Believe by Disturbed. I never got into Disturbed, gotta be honest. Oh, and he also said American Idiot by Green Day. Dookie was my choice, but I know American Idiot as well received as well. So those were his picks. Listen, Allison and Chris Wiz, so I really appreciate you guys doing this first ever kind of like fun top five with me. I want to have you guys back to do another music one from the 90s. Whenever I do 90s, I'm going to call you guys first. see if we can reminisce about it. I hope you guys had a good time.
Absolutely.
It was great. You guys had, I'm going to go make a playlist with all this shit on it. And then I'm going to put up this bonus episode for everybody next week, and everybody will be listening to their 90s rock thanks to us. So that's it, guys. That's our top five rock albums of the 1990s. I'd love to hear online what you guys thought, if you agree with us, if you didn't agree with us. If you think we suck, which somebody just told us a couple days ago, I appreciate that.
Fuck
that guy. But whatever you guys want to do, find us online, 2peasonapod.com. Just go there and click on the contact page. You can also follow us on Twitter at 2peasonapod. Gerald signing off. Chris Wiz, you want to say anything to the people?
Man, just listen to your 90s music, man.
Yeah, do that. Allison, you want to say goodbye or anything? Send people off?
Just, hey, thanks for having me, Gerald. It was pretty awesome.
No, it was it was a blast. I really appreciate you guys. I'll be talking to you guys soon, okay?
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, be good.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Two Peas on a Podcast. The views and opinions expressed were solely those of the hosts and are not necessarily shared by our distributors or hosting companies. Visit twopeasonapod.com for more info.